Welcome back to The Record. I'm Bill Radke.
Mr. Zuckerberg, would you be comfortable sharing with us the name of the hotel you stayed in last night?
No.
If you've messaged anybody this week, would you share with us the names of the people you've messaged?
Senator, no, I would probably not choose to do that publicly here.
I think that may be what this is all about. Your right to privacy, the limits of your right to privacy, and how much you give away in modern America in the name of, quote, connecting people around the world.
That is Illinois Senator Dick Durbin questioning Facebook CEO Mark Zuckerberg at a congressional hearing last week. It's not just his hotel coordinates. Zuckerberg is famously concerned about privacy offline. He bought the four houses surrounding his Palo Alto home just to tear them down. But he also said in those hearings that his own data was exposed to Cambridge Analytica, and he still uses Facebook. Like Zuckerberg, a lot of us have traded data privacy for convenience. And in 2018, how realistic is the expectation of privacy anyway? Here to chat with me about that is Jen Golbeck, professor at the University of Maryland in College Park. She's also the director of their Social Intelligence Lab. Welcome back, Professor.
Glad to be here.
Do I have that right? Has America decided to trade privacy for convenience?
I don't think so, but I also think it's really complicated, right? On one hand, practically, we have been giving up a lot of information for convenience. On the other hand, you know, we really don't understand all the information that's out there, that's aggregated, the things that people can find out about us. And so we're not really making an informed choice about that at this point.
Even if we do read the terms of service?
Yeah, I mean, so I've read all the terms of service for every social media site because, you know, I do this for work. Mm-hmm. It's painful, but it's also super vague. So if we look at Facebook as an example, they have one line in their terms of service that says your data may be used for, you know, X, Y, and Z, and research is a line that's in there. And that includes everything from, you know, internal analyses that you might expect them to do, to things like large-scale psychological experiments that they run on the American people, you know, trying to figure out, can I make you happy? Can I make you sad? Can I change the way you're going to vote? There's no way for you to know. I mean, they don't even know at the time how vast the use of your information is or what they're going to do with it. And so even if you read those things super carefully, you don't really get a full idea of the scope of what they're doing with it.
You've said that you don't think we talk about privacy in a useful way. We ought to try replacing the word privacy with consent. What do you mean by that?
This is like my mission right
Oh, yeah?
Now. Because it's really been since like 1999, I think, is one of the first times that I found a quote from some tech guy saying, you know, privacy's dead, get over it. And, you know, being able to keep all of your personal data secret is definitely not possible anymore. I mean, we live in this digital connected space, and whether it's hackers or just records naturally being kept of what you're doing, sure, you can't keep all of your activities secret. But privacy isn't about somebody not finding something out. Privacy is about me disclosing something about myself to you at the time that I choose in the way that I want, right? So, we're having a public conversation now. If you and I were having a drink together, I might tell you some other information that I wouldn't say on air. And if we had been friends for years, I might tell you, you know, some really deep personal secrets. Like, that's what privacy is. Not that it's entirely closed off and no one finds out, but that I get to choose what you find out. And so when we have these conversations about data privacy, the line that, like, well, privacy is dead, get over it, what that really means is I don't care if you consent to me having this information or not, right? I can take it by force, so just stop resisting and let me have it. And I think that's really unproductive, from a technological perspective, but also psychologically. It's really important to humans to be able to control the information about themselves, their, you know, deepest secrets, or even stuff that's really public, to have control over that. So, yeah, I think if we're having conversations about privacy, if you say something about it, try saying the same sentence and just putting the word consent in instead of privacy and see if it sounds really bad, because if it does, you're probably not thinking about privacy in the right way.
Well, what about my power of consent that is deleting Facebook?
Yeah, I mean, some people have talked about doing that. I haven't seen anything that says it's happened en masse. But yeah, you know, that's an option if you're super freaked out by it. I think I mentioned, you know, when I was on the show before, I still have Facebook and I use it to keep up with some people, but I delete my content. So I use a tool called Facebook Timeline Cleaner, which is a little browser plugin. And every couple weeks, I just go through and delete everything I've done that's more than 2 weeks old. And so there's only, you know, a few posts and pictures. There's no likes up there for me. So all the kind of Cambridge Analytica stuff, none of this really works on me because there's not much data there. So there's, you know, a lot of options between have Facebook be the archive of your entire life to delete it and never use it again. There are ways to use it that are a little more ephemeral, that are a little more careful, and that give you more control.
That's interesting because, and again, we're talking with professor at University of Maryland, Jen Goldbeck, director of their social intelligence lab, and she writes artificial intelligence tools. And I've heard the most worried among us say, dude, you delete everything past 2 weeks, that's not going to work. You know, Facebook is craftier than that. And I hear you saying, no, that's you can keep away Cambridge Analytica with easily available tools.
Yeah. So, you know, when I talk to people about these kinds of issues, I say you got to break it down into kind of three groups that you're worried about getting your data. And I have a representative person for each group, like a person you're going to go on a date with, an ex that you're in like a nasty divorce and custody battle with, or like the NSA, right? Uh-huh. And depending on which of those groups you're worried about, you want to take different steps. So, you know, if you're worried about the NSA, and that actually includes any massive organization, whether it's governmental or including Facebook, right? They have, sure, they may keep copies of your data. If you're really worried about that, you can protect yourself, but there's some pretty extreme and inconvenient measures that you have to take. If you're worried about places like Cambridge Analytica, they're accessing the data essentially through APIs that any app using Facebook is using. And when you delete your data, Facebook does not provide that way. They don't give that to third parties. And the same goes for this other stuff that has been in the press lately that they are keeping, like your chat logs, you know, your phone call logs. That's not stuff that comes out through the API to third parties. And so, you know, if you do this kind of easy deleting, it protects you from a lot of people up to and probably excluding the NSA and Facebook itself. But it gives you a lot more protection than just leaving it there.
When we talk about the Facebook danger, what exactly is the worst case scenario we're talking about? Are we talking about somebody issuing fake news at election time? Are we talking about identity theft? What's the thing I'm supposed to be most worried about?
That's a hard question because the thing keeps changing. But I think Cambridge Analytica kind of gives us a hint. You know, part of what they did is that it's not that they were just using explicit stuff that people said. They were using algorithms like the ones that I build to find out things about your personality traits, what kind of ideas might be most appealing to you, and then essentially using that to do psychological experiments to try to manipulate the way you think about issues and who you'll vote for. Now, that doesn't mean we only have to worry about people that, you know, trying to control who we vote for, but it does mean that there's a lot of interesting, you know, what we would have called in the Cold War psychological operations, right?
Mm-hmm.
Really intense ways to kind of manipulate people and what they do that can absolutely be carried out on Facebook. You know, now we've seen it here in the U.S., but you can imagine across the world how these sorts of things are happening. But we've seen all sorts of different challenges, right? We've seen in, you know, Chechnya, if you remember last year, they had a big LGBT purge. Basically, they were killing gay men across the country, telling their families to kill them before the government would get to them and kill them.
Mm-hmm.
And they were using social media to out people that way. Now, that's not a risk that we seem to face in the U.S. right now. But you can imagine, like, having this huge amount of data and these powerful algorithms that can tell you things that people have chosen to keep to themselves. There's lots of ways that bad actors can use that to manipulate, to terrorize, to blackmail. And we're just starting to finally see hints of that with Cambridge Analytica.
Well, what are some of the other privacy threatening actions that we maybe don't know about? You know a lot about what companies are doing to spy on us. What are they doing?
Yeah, so Cambridge Analytica gives us a good hint. Now, there was some people doing stuff there that they shouldn't, but basically when you install apps, whether they're social media apps like games or quizzes or apps on your phone, they can harvest a huge amount of data from you that you don't know. And what we saw, you know, in that case is also that even if you didn't use those apps, if your friends did, a lot of your data got out there. And that I think is one of the more concerning issues. And this happens all the time. So lots of apps that you install on your phone will pull your contact list, will access your chat logs, your call history. We've seen Facebook called out for that in the last couple weeks, but they're definitely not the only ones doing it. It's a pretty common practice. And so, you know, that's one thing if I say, all right, I don't like that Facebook has this data about me. But what if I'm a person who says, I don't have Facebook, I don't want it, I don't want them to know anything about me, but because you have it, they suddenly have all this information about me, including all the texts that I've sent to you, all the times that we've talked to each other. A lot of that is really private information that no one consented to hand over to Facebook, and yet they get it anyway. To the extent that Facebook has shadow profiles on basically everyone in the U.S. who doesn't have a Facebook profile. They know all kinds of things about you and your friends and what you do from information that other people have provided.
Yes, so people know stuff about my kids, whether I want them to or not. And again, I always want to ask, what's the worst case scenario about that? You talk about kids, and I'm a parent, it's hairs on the back of the neck go up, but what's the actual danger I ought to be worried about?
So we don't really know at this point, right? I mean, the risk of, like, child abduction kind of stuff, like, you know, sure, if that's going to happen, people might use social media data, but that's extremely rare, and I don't think that's, you know, the most practical thing for us to worry about. But say I was kind of charged with being evil, and I had to think of an evil way to use that data. What I might do is start tracking all the kids' data that's on social media. And it's not the stuff that kids are sharing, that their parents start sharing about the kids and the parents share about their lives. And I'm going to track that for the next, you know, 10, 15 years. So when those kids become adults, even if they haven't shared anything, I have a full history of everything that happened to them in their childhood, right? The birthday parties that went wrong, the parents going out and drinking too much, like all those sorts of traumas. And I see people share this on Facebook, right? The kids are bullied, kids that end up having to go to like PTSD treatment because of a bad thing that's happened at school. I'm going to know all that and have a really deep psychological profile about these kids that touches on like their most fundamental childhood issues that I can then use to do all kinds of manipulative things to them. And we haven't seen that done too much yet, but it's certainly a possibility. And I don't want us to discount it because it sounds kind of like a bad sci-fi movie, because it's essentially what Cambridge Analytica did to adults. So you imagine having that data for decades and what you could do to people with that.
So then computer science professor Jen Goldbeck, who writes these artificial intelligence algorithms, your approach is what? You know, I might model myself after you. Do you have no Internet of Things in your house? What?
I have no Internet of Things in my house. That's true.
No Amazon Echo?
No.
None of that.
Oh, my God, no. I don't understand, like, why people would put a surveillance device like that in their house. I mean, I do understand, but yeah, that's way past the line for me in terms of comfort that I have with this kind of stuff. I don't have any of that, no smart TVs, no smart anything except the humans in the house.
Yeah, for those who don't know about smart TVs, there are TVs that come, it's a TV, I'm supposed to look at it, but it's got a microphone in it listening to me.
Yeah, and so I got a new TV a few years ago, and I happened to get the last one before the new, this was my Samsung, before the new Samsung smart TVs came out. And those TVs actually come with a privacy warning that says don't have sensitive conversations in front of your TV because the TV's listening. I was ready to crack mine open and like pull the microphone out because I have those technical skills. But yeah, like that, it totally creeps me out. Now, I'm not saying everybody needs to be worried about this, right? Some people, they're like, cool, you know, they're not going to do anything bad with this. Maybe they can do some good with it. We've seen, I don't know if it was an Alexa or an Amazon device that was used in a murder trial because it recorded part of the murder.
Yep.
It's pretty interesting stuff, right? But for me, having those sorts of surveillance devices, whether it's, you know, audio or video, as a security person, it totally creeps me out. So I've explicitly chosen to not have those in my house.
And You were telling our producer about apps that turn my phone microphone on?
This is pretty common, actually. There's a lot of different apps that will activate your microphone in the background and kind of listen in on what you're saying. Some of them use it for less nefarious purposes. So there are certain kinds of technologies that, like when you go into a retail store, can track where you are in the store using sound. So they actually can know how long you pause in front of a particular shelf or a particular item and look at it. But they also can listen in and see what you're saying about it. And do you like it? Do you not? Do you think it's too expensive? It's actually somewhat common. Certainly not the majority of apps do this, but it's not at all surprising to find apps that will turn on that microphone in the background and just kind of listen in.
And yet, Professor, we reached you on email.
Right.
You're not a Luddite. You are exposing yourself through your email account, are you not?
Absolutely. I think, like I said, you've got to figure out where do you draw the line from. You know, there's convenience that I get from this. This is necessary for me to live my life, and I'll take the steps I have to feel as comfortable as I can. Where that line is for people varies. Email, one of my biggest fears is that, somebody gets a hold of all my emails and publishes them. That would be terrible, right? So I have, as much security as possible on the email account. I have different accounts for different things. But it would be, impossible to function, in this digital world, especially as a computer scientist, without email, right, having to make phone calls and stuff. But the line kind of gets crossed with me with a lot of apps and then with smart devices where I feel like whatever convenience they would offer me doesn't really matter. But the security and the privacy risks for me really matter to me personally. And so, that's in the space of things where I'm not going to use those.
Well, that's it for now. This is University of Maryland at College Park, Professor Jen Goldbeck, director of their social intelligence lab, writer of AI algorithms. And I would love to talk to you more. I have more questions. I want to hear the stories you're going to tell me if we ever have that drink that you mentioned that, will happen completely offline. But let's keep talking about this. Thanks a lot for this, Professor.
My pleasure.
Okay, talk to you again soon. This is The Record on KUOW Seattle with former Microsoft CEO Steve Ballmer in just a moment.